The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. ParaX.
This is Lindsay with Center Stage Events, and Mike and Dave are the nicest, most talented people I will never have in my roster. They're the top of the bottom.
Oh! Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Good evening, ParaX. You are listening to the Odyssey Files. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. It is Monday night. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Dave Sawyering. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Mike. How are you doing today? This fine 40-degree January, what the heck is today, the 11th?
14th.
14th. There we go. We're in the middle of January already. I'm losing track. I'm getting old. But I'm good.
Well,
I'm good.
Since I work nights, I missed, I guess, this 40-degree day.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. It was a long day today. It was about 11-hour day today for me. So it was nice. The weather was decent, you know, for January. I mean, it could be 20 below like it normally is.
Well, I laid in bed for like 11 hours, if that helps.
Well, that helps. Yeah.
All right. Enough chit-chat. We have important stuff to do.
Yep.
Because vaping on his whatever that is our wonderful guest tonight, Mr. Ken Bogle. Good evening, Ken.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Wonderful. Apparently it was 40 degrees in Minnesota today. I just learned
Apparently, yeah, and it was cold as here they say a coal miner's balls. Here is cold as coal miner's balls. That's what they say in Kentucky, because coal. But yeah, it was cold. It was terribly cold. And I tried not to get out in it, but then I was like, you know, I really could use a steak and a shopping trip. So I went shopping and got a steak, because that's what I do.
That's how you roll.
That's how I do.
You know what? There's important things in life, and when you have a taste for a steak, I don't care if it's 40 below zero. I'm getting in the car and going to buy a steak. So
yeah, my dear friend of mine, he only grills out in winter. So, you know, his name's Zach, and Zach only grills out when it's like terribly cold. So he's like having steak all the day, like all the days steak. And I'm like, dang, I got to get in on that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at that Instagram and my mouth waters, you know?
Okay. All right. So I have a question here.
Sure.
And this is because my father lives in Arizona, and I went golfing with him when it was 58 degrees outside. And I'm in polo and shorts, and he's in pants, rain gear, a stocking cap, and mittens.
Yep.
So when you say it was terribly cold in Kentucky, what degree was it?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I didn't bother looking at the screen or listening to what people... I don't know. Look, I wear when I'm not doing Ken Bogle stuff, it's all layers upon layers upon layers of clothes and a toboggan hat or like a baseball cap and a scarf. Like, I'm all incognito, trying to eat my... You know, eating a steak looking like somebody who really should not be indoors. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what it is. It was cold, Michael. It was cold. What the hell do you want from me?
I want the ability to tell you that you're insane if you think that it's cold outside.
Hey, I totally do not think that we are in any way, shape, or form close to Minnesota. But here in Kentucky, just last week, it was 60 degrees. And then the next day, it was like 38. So
that must have been terrible for you guys.
It was awful. It's so bad. Okay.
All right. So I'm just going to say... Right now in Lexington, Kentucky, it's 30 degrees.
Oh, cold.
Okay. Yeah, kind of, all right.
That's cold. I'll give you that. That is cold.
All right. Yes. It's mild.
Come on. If you can make ice, it's cold. Come on.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I know that 30 is below zero. I just don't know if you could actually. It would take like hours for ice to actually form at 30 degrees. I think you're all right. I'd be out there and without a coat and have a conversation.
Look, I'm California dreaming. So like, just get me to Cali. Let me, you know what I mean? Like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not old, but I'm at that age where, you know, one, you got to be careful what you eat if you're not near a restroom. I'm at that age. And then I'm also at the age where if anything at all remotely gets chilly, things hurt. You know what I mean? Like, my knees kind of go, you know what I mean? So I'm not old. I'm at that age where shit's starting to go left. You know what I mean?
Yep. I'm there.
Yeah.
He's there. I'm not. I'm still good. So Ken,
yeah.
One of the things that I've always wondered about, and surprisingly for the first two times you were on the show, I never asked, but what are some of your inspirations, not only now, but just like way back when you first got into tarot and decided to do it like more of on a professional level?
Well, of course, first there was my grandmother, right? Because I was 8 when I started. So sometime in February, that'll be 27 years ago. So she was the first real influence I had. And then following that, I think it was Sylvia Brown, who was, you know, weird, and everybody has an opinion about her. And she was on Montel Williams and all this. But everybody has an opinion about every single psychic, so whatever, like or not, that was one of my inspirations. And then it became Lorraine Warren because I saw her do it in a way that wasn't like sort of a banner carrier, I'm a psychic. She just sort of felt things, you know, and this is the way she reported stuff. And again, like her or not, that's her vibe, and I totally dug it. And then, you know, nowadays, you know, you got to tip your hat to people like Chip Coffee. And, you know, Chip and I have, Chip is an amazing, amazing person, and I'm happy he's in my life, but he sort of laid the gauntlet as to what it was like to be a psychic these days. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's on Queen Latifah. He's on some kind of the Comedy Central about drunken history. You know what I mean? Like, Chip sort of laid that down. And so, although he and I do things incredibly different, he and I are totally different, he's still an influence of mine. Yeah, totally that. You know, and Stevie Nicks, you know what I mean? Like, Stevie Nicks, you know, that's where all my black comes from, you know? So yeah, those are my influences. Those are my inspirations.
I don't know how to take that last one.
I mean, it's hard to say that you could go through my life and not be like, well, something about him is very Fleetwood Mac. You know what I mean? Like, something about that kid is very sort of 70s. You know, he's stuck there. He was born in 84, but he's 77. You know what I mean?
Well,
wait, you were born. I'm
sorry. The Montel Williams comment dated you. I just want to put that out there. So yeah. The Montel Williams. Oh, yeah. She was on Montel Williams and da 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 da. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, is he digging deep going to Montel Williams?
The only thing that could have been better than that is if you would have said like Richard Bay.
Mm.
Does anybody remember who that is anymore?
None. I have no
really?
Idea.
Really?
Oh, totally went over the top of my head with that
one. Oh man, I miss Richard Bay. That's who I think he was on right before Montel Williams.
Oh, I never watched Montel Williams either.
Oh,
neither did I.
Yeah, that's why.
You missed out, kids.
Sorry.
It was a good time.
Well, fine. So, I like the fact that you included Lorraine Warren, because I agree with you on that one, 100%.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Chip, love Chip. You know, same as you. But, you know, so do you, in your opinion then, do you think that Chip has kind of raised the bar for everybody?
No, Chip didn't raise the bar. Chip demolished the bar. He rebuilt it and then bedazzled it.
I wonder how
I would say that's probably a good... That's good. I like that.
Yeah, so like you, someone needs to like it. Someone immediately go on Twitter and tag him and tell him I just said that. Chip Coffee did not raise the bar. He reestablished where the bar is and what it is and what it takes to get there. And, you know, he gave me some really great career advice, which I paid for. And gladly I did because I was, you know. You know, so anyway, I don't think he set the bar. I think he reestablished the bar itself.
Hold on, I'm typing that to Twitter to him right now.
I think that's a great analysis. Honestly, I think because he is Chip right now, like is the psychic medium that is being thrown into the celebrity status pool, whether he wants to be there or not, you know.
Well, okay, I get that, and I hate to interrupt you, but
that's okay.
You have these other people, you know, Teresa Caputo,
right?
Who am I saying that right?
She's been slammed so hard though with
right, but I'm saying she was kind of catapulted to that degree. And then you have that twink. What's his name? The blonde one who's up the Kardashians' ass. What's his name? Tyler Henry. And he's always up, like, he's up Seacrest and the Kardashians and cute little blonde thing. Good for him, but Chip Coffee's OG.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chip Coffee didn't raise the bar. He demolished it, remade it, and then bedazzled it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I love the bedazzled part. That's
right. That's what got me too.
Yeah. Funny that.
Okay. So now we got that out of the way. I almost want to ask Chip to get online and just bring him into this conversation, but I won't.
Oh God.
That would be hilarious.
He'd be like, Barry, you woke me up. What are you doing? I'm at the Cracker Barrel. Get off it. And Greta would be somewhere in a selfie on Instagram, like just hiding in the back, like, I'm here. I love her.
I at this year's Paracon, I was able to meet her for the first time. And I agree. I liked her a great deal. Yeah. So there's something very personal. I know that you wanted to talk about tonight, and for me, it was surprising, very much so. And I know that last year, late September, early October, I started out like a normal day, and then all of a sudden, I get on Facebook. Or Twitter, one of the two, and I see a message from Lindsay mm-hmm. Center, mm-hmm. who is your manager, and not only was I saddened when I read it, but I was shocked because there was like no lead up. It was just because you and I are friends on Facebook. You know, mm-hmm. I follow you on Twitter, and I get on each. Social media platform each day. Had no idea that this was coming. And then after that, you just kind of whoosh, disappeared. Mm. What happened to make that whole situation come about?
Well, after 10 years of being together with someone, my husband, we were together for 10 years. We were married for the last three of those because it was only in those 3 years that the state of Kentucky allowed gay marriage. He said to me on our 10-year anniversary, the day of, that he wasn't happy and he didn't love me anymore and he wanted out. And the lead up to that was difficult because we had tried various different things. I thought we were completely 100% happy. I thought we would be together forever. I thought that part of my life was done. I was never going to have to ever worry about that ever again. Not ever. And then we were filming season 2. which season two of Tarot Day was filmed in over the course of 36 hours. And I did the first day of filming, which was about four episodes. And then I went home, and he and I totally had it out. And I'd been sleeping in the floor for a while, and because it wasn't comfortable in the bed. The bed was crowded. And with issues and a number of other attendees, and I just, it was just not good for me to be there. And so I was in the floor, and I said to him, what, you just want to, this is what, just over? Would you just want a divorce or something like that? And he just was blank. No tears, no crying. And I was there crying, and I thought, oh, snap. That's not good. And then later on in the fight, he said to me, no, I don't want to get a divorce. And, you know, I do want to work things out. And I, in my gut, I was just still kind of put back. So I go into film the second day, and my great friend and production assistant, Kim Ford Johnson, Mama Kim, she picked me up and she said, what's wrong? And I said, it's over. I know that it's over. This is not good. My marriage is done. And I cried, and we went to the airport and picked up Nick Groff. And Nick said, dude, you're not okay. What, your vibe is off. What's wrong? And I said, Nick, it's over. My marriage is over. I feel it. And we get to the location, which is the Kentucky Castle, a big, beautiful place. And there's Elizabeth. And Elizabeth Saint said, you know, my God, we're not doing another effing thing until we get you okay. You or you're not all right. And I cried and told her, and we talked about it, and I fixed my makeup and took a shot of moonshine, and I went ahead and filmed the first episode and did that. Great episode. Cried through the break, fixed my makeup, took a shot, right back to episode two. Same thing in three, four, and five. So we filmed five more episodes that day, sobbing between every single one of them. And so Nick and Elizabeth and Mama Kim were the first people to know that this was bad. However, I didn't really think it was over. I thought we can fix this because I said till death do us part. I said that. And I'm really big about if I say something, I'm, by God, I'm sticking with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm that person. And if I've made a deal with you, then you better believe it's going to happen. And so I came home that day. That was the second day of filming, and I cried, and he cried, and we kind of, I thought, worked it out. And then the day of our 10-year anniversary, he said that, I don't love you, I'm not happy, and I went out. And I mean, it was one of those real BS moves of like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I love you, but this isn't love. I don't love you like that. Like, and I just stood there like, you gotta be kidding me. And I had a complete and total, I disassociated from life. I mean, my brain broke. And so I called everybody I could think of, panicked, everybody I knew that was in town. And I was like, someone's gotta come pick me up. Somebody has to pick me up. I can't drive. I can't think. Someone come get me. And long story short, I ended up at Mama Kim's house, and I stayed there for hours just crying. My security guard and one of my best friends, his name's Adam Johnson, he came in, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and he crawled into the bed next to me, and he just held me while I cried like a baby. And I continued to do that for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I cried. I did not know how I was going to get through life. I showed up for my day job every day. I did continue to do a couple of readings, and then I eventually stopped doing that because there was no way I was going to help anybody else in the shape I was in. I was devastated. I really... And I don't mean this lightly. I did not think I was going to live through that at all. And so that led to what I guess you would call it a hiatus or whatever, like a big freaking break until November when I said, you got to get back. You got to do the work. You can't just go away. And really it came at Lindsay Center, who owns Center Stage, you know, my manager. She said to me, look, Ken, you've been on the soapbox for a really long time telling people about how to get over stuff. And you've given a lot of advice. So look, you can either go to, and this is Lindsay Center, who's probably one of the sweetest people in the world, said to me, so look, you can either, you know, go to bed with it and become a hypocrite, which we all know you love those, or you can get up, wipe your tears, and you can process it and take your own advice. And so I started doing that, taking my own advice. And thought about all the things I would say to someone in a reading and coped and dealt with it. You know, that's what happened. And it was difficult because he had not given me all of the truth. And my spirit guide was doing that for him. She would say to me, in weird, inopportune times, get ready, or are you ready? And I knew that something was about to happen, and she would say, there is someone else, and there has been someone else. And I would say to him, who is he? And he wouldn't say a word. And then it came, you know, finally after pressure, okay, here he is, here's this guy. And my spirit guide said, get ready, because the truth is he, in every way, shape, or form, is better than you. So I Googled him, and I looked him up, and sure enough, he was a lot better than me. I thought. Externally, yes. Beautiful, young, successful, educated, but turned out to be a really twisted individual. And she'd say, you know, get ready. There are pictures that you haven't seen. And I found those pictures. And then there are disturbing things that you should know. And I found those disturbing things. And it broke my heart and devastated me. So it was one of those times where being a psychic was horrible. Having a spirit guide was horrible. So when the bulk of all of the terrible things, I mean, emails between everybody and stuff that were about, you know, being together while I was still married to my husband. When all that was all done, I said to my spirit guide, why on God's green earth would you be doing this to me? And she said, because, Ken, if I didn't tell you this, you would never get over it. And there was no way in hell he'd ever give you the whole truth. So it was an experiment in human endurance and human pain that I haven't felt in a very long time, probably since my parents made me homeless at 15. I struggled that hard. So that's what happened to me. That's where I went. I went to one of the darkest places I'd been in a long time.
So, I can't speak for Dave. So, I mean, if he, wants to chime in as well, but, I'm certainly no stranger to, betrayal. Such as that may be a little different. Just the being lied to and quit on and whatnot. Not so much by a loved one, but somebody that you trusted, somebody, whether they're friends or spouses, lovers, you know, doesn't matter. Betrayal is betrayal. Mm-hmm. And I know personally, you know, any time that happens, I feel a great amount of anger and hurt and heartbreak and all that kind of stuff. How do you get to the point where that doesn't fester and just become like hatred?
Mm-hmm. I fight with it every day. I fought with it today. Now, look, I'm one of the only paranormal people out there, and I don't consider myself a celebrity, but I have a platform, and I'm the only person I know on a platform that's telling people the honest truth about who they are. And the honest truth is I am angry every single day. I am devastated every single day. I'm dizzy, and I'm shook. However, the only way I have been able to process it, for example, today, is coming to my prayer space. And I sit there and I pray and I meditate and I chant and I pray and I meditate and I focus my mind and I say, okay, look, I'm in hell. Like, this is as close to hell as you're going to get. And I know that there are levels and levels of happiness that go way before that. So I kind of try to meditate and pray to get myself from level to level till I come to a place where the anger, the pain, and the suffering is hollow, without reason, without point, without real weight in my soul and in my spirit. And that makes it easier to deal with. So it comes from feeding my soul and feeding my spirit and getting my head right and trying to find something close to compassion, you know? I'm very clear about this. I don't think he's a bad person, nor would I want anyone else to think that. That's why I said to Lindsay, please write this, because there's no way I could write something that's not one-sided. I'm too broken. You know, I wanted it all to be very balanced. So I don't think horrible things about him. I don't want anyone else to, but I still feel like any normal person would, like you would, like Dave would, like when someone pulls the rug out from underneath you and you're drowning, you're mad at them, you're hurt, you're devastated, and anger is a part of that. So it comes from deep spiritual work and processing it, not allowing myself to compartmentalize it and swallow it and shove it down, just working and dealing with it. It's an ugly business. It ain't pretty, but you got to do it.
So I just want to say something quick, is I'm just glad that you're with us still. Cause I know the darkness that comes from that. And I know the fight and the struggle that it takes to do what you're doing. And so I just want to say that I'm glad that we're sitting here talking tonight, and that the darkness didn't consume you to the point where you caved in. So,
well, I wouldn't possibly get into the details of it right now. But I'll tell you for a fact, I'm surprised. I'm surprised because, and it came from the spiritual work I was telling you about, and all of my friends and chosen family, that kept me from it. But there were times that I was on the edge, really, literally, sometimes on the edge, and it was hard to come back off of it. And I mean, you know, I stayed drunk. I totally, when I wasn't doing my readings, look, and the honest truth is I fell off the wagon. I totally fell off the wagon. I resorted to, you know, alcohol and drugs again, because it was like I couldn't cope. And then that became a thing where it was like, oh my God, if you don't get it together, you're never going to be Kim Bogle again. You're going to end up homeless. You're going to end up dead. You're going to end up dead. That's what I really thought. Forget saying homeless. I thought I would end up dead. So I had to pull it together. Yeah, I'm shocked. But thank you for saying that, because it took a tremendous amount of strength. I ain't even lying. A tremendous amount of strength. That.
Do you think that there will ever come a day for you where that anger is not important or not there?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Okay. So I think that the anger on a daily basis after I've worked with it becomes not important, but I don't know, babe, if there's ever going to be a day where it doesn't come up. I can't say that yet, because I don't know. I think the anger is always probably going to, maybe some part of it is always going to be there. I think, really. And I'm always honest with you. I think it's a part of it's always going to be there.
But I think it's going to be in diminished levels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So right now it might be 20%, you know, 30%. It'll work its way down to, you know, the 2 to 3% range. It'll come out when it's going to come out. There's nothing you could do about it. It's just going to show up and be that annoying little dark cloud that just drifts into your life momentarily, and there's nothing you can do about it, because we all have those.
Right.
And you're just gonna grab it and deal with it and move on. But you know, it's always gonna be there, but I can tell you for a fact it's gonna diminish. You know, right. And as you move forward and fill yourself more with light, the light's gonna overcome the darkness. And the more light you get in, the less darkness is gonna be there, because we're all just 100%. So if you've got a 50-50 mix right now, if you add 10% light, that light has to take over something. It's going to take over the dark.
Right, right.
So then it's going to be 60-40. Then eventually it's going to be 70-30, you know, and then you're going to work your way back up to where you need to be for you as an individual, and that'll be back to, you know, 95-5, and who the hell's going to complain about that?
Right,
you
know, well, I mean, everybody who knows me knows there's some sort of simmering anger there always, so, like, always. We can't be too happy or people won't recognize me.
Right.
But I think it ruined me. I think it ruined me toward marriage. I think I'll never do that again. Not ever. Like if I even tweet something close to Here Comes the Bride. I want all of you to get together and call me and say, get it. No, show up. Come here and beat me down. Because I don't think I'm ever going to, I don't want to ever do that again. I don't ever think it'll ever happen again. And I just really honestly, for a long time, I thought I'm never even going to love again. And I think we all do that when we go through this sort of a thing, right, where you're like, nobody will ever have this much authority in my life ever again. Nobody's going to have this much control. I totally subscribe to the thought that my love is always going to come from people who watch the show. My love is always going to come from people who get readings with me, my clients, my friends, my chosen family, people who show up for lectures and seminars and gallery readings. I said, you know, and this is the truth. I get enough love out of all of those people that I'll get through it. If I never love again, that's going to get me through it. And that's where I started. And I totally believed it. But now, you know, having dated and met great, wonderful, beautiful, attractive people and going on dates with younger men and all this, and it changes. Yeah. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't think that I'm ever going to get married again. That's not going to happen. Not at all.
Ken, if you ever tweet or post on Facebook that anything, like you said, remotely to Here Comes the Bride, I will definitely hit respond and say, congratulations, I'm happy for you.
No.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Call 911. I've had too much of a medication or not enough of a medication. You got to call 911 because I am not in my right mind at all.
Yes, you are. I was going to say, I think Kentucky's only about a, let's see, Minnesota to Kentucky, if I remember right, it's only maybe 10 hours, 9 hours, something like that. That we'll make the road trip.
Okay, yeah. And then what
to
I'll
come
do
to the wedding.
Yeah, right. But what what I will do is once I've got back to my senses and hopefully recover from the ass whooping you've given me, I'll compensate you for gas, travel, and lodging.
That's perfectly fine. Yeah.
Right.
Perfectly fine.
And then you're going to give us an RSVP.
You get a table up front. Yeah.
Right.
Me plus one.
Okay.
I will find a date.
Okay.
It's not going to be me, Mike.
Yeah.
No. Otherwise, I would have been like, I'll bring Dave. But no. Okay, no. You get your own damn RSVP.
Yeah. No, I'm getting my own RSVP. Yes.
Okay. We're going to go to break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about season 2 of Tarot Date with Ken Buckle. So we'll be back here in a couple minutes. Enjoy these commercials. And you're listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please. Take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No.
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Oh. UFOs. Bigfoot. Cryptid.
All this is on the call. You think it's you listening to the words of Para X.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere,
Thanks for making Para X part of your day.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
This is Elizabeth Saint. You know, in my journeys, I've confronted an over 1,000-year-old demon from the depths of Shepherdstown. But then, you know what happened? I came across Mike and Dave. And hot damn, nothing could have prepared me for the Odyssey Files. My second favorite radio show. I love you guys.
And we are back. With us here on the Odyssey Files is Mr. Ken Bogle, our guest. We just spent the last 20 or some minutes talking about this personal tragedy of his, this divorce from his husband. And Ken, I one of the things that shocked me was that you wanted to talk about this. It was your idea to talk about this. And I never particularly asked why. Why did you want to come on and talk about this and share your story?
Honestly, I'm grateful that you allowed me to do it and that we talked about it, because I totally trust you to do this sort of thing, because you and I go back, you know, and so I've been here several times and I'm glad. And you know, I want people to know that the people that you see on TV, you know, in this industry, the people that you read blogs about, the people who have, like I said earlier, some kind of platform, you often look at them and think they must really have it together, you know, or gosh, their life seems pretty perfect, because nobody's sharing the hard times. No one's sharing the difficult struggle. And, you know, I wanted people out there to hear that we go through it too. I'm going through it. And I wanted then to be able to say to them, you know, in these dark moments, in these times of transition and change and upheaval, you got to look at the opportunity to restructure and to rebuild and then say, thank you, God, for this chance. You know, thank you so much, universe, or whatever that you believe, for showing me that, you know, I'm strong enough to get through this, or just to appreciate this light you have to keep going, to keep carrying on, to persevere and to endure it. You know, I want people to know that they're not alone. You're not alone. You know, I'm hurting too. And we all do. And it comes, our sufferings may be different in detail. However, pain is pain. And if you think your favorite celebrity, your favorite paranormal celebrity, or the person who's got a little bit of a show here or there doesn't suffer, you're wrong. We're right there with you. And I thought it was my responsibility to do so. And I thought, you know, I hope to God someone hears this message and they don't jump off that ledge. I hope that someone hears this interview and they find the strength it takes to keep going and to process it and to work through it and then to own it. That's what I wanted.
Perfect. So you mentioned obviously that you've filmed now in 36 hours. That's impressive.
Yeah.
The season two of Tarot Date. Now, I know last time that you were on the show, you talked about you were talking about doing it and that you wanted that college film class to do it. Now, did you hire them to do it? Were you able to include them?
Here's some insider information, and I'll dance around it very carefully. So listen well. The administration of said school determined that this was not the kind of content that they wanted their students to film or be a part of. By doing so, they completely messed up the curriculum for those students. They denied those students a chance to have a financial contribution from VidiSpace. They messed up the chance for these students to have access to 4K cameras, to 1080p cameras, to learn how to use those cameras, and to work with Nick Groff and Elizabeth Saint on producing a show. That the administration stole that from the students by saying, no, we don't want to be associated with the paranormal. Okay, so that happened, and that happened through a huge wrench in my plan, obviously, and we had to reformulate. So this is probably about the fifth or sixth reformulating I had to do, restructuring that I had to do with Tarot Dates Season 2. And when I found this out, I called Elizabeth and said, I quit. I'm not doing this. And, you know, I was, and actually know what my exact words were. I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry. No matter how I turn or which direction I go, I am not making progress and I don't know what to do. And she said, okay, we're not going to quit. You don't have to be sorry. We're going to figure this out. We need a team to film it, a place to film it. And it has to go in this order. Get it, Ken. You got to do it. And I said, okay, I buckled down and, long story short, no, we didn't get to use the kids, but we got a fabulous new location, the Kentucky Castle in Versailles, Kentucky. Fabulous. We filmed the whole thing in a turret. How cool that was. And we filmed all in 36 hours. We filmed all 9 episodes. We took all the production promo pictures. We did all the promo videos that are going to go along with it. We did all the little ads that are going to pop up about it. We did all of this in 36 hours and had a blast doing it. And turned out what I think is the best work I've ever done in 27 years in the process. And that itself is an interesting story.
Well, that's impressive. That's impressive that it going through what you were going through and then being able to kind of look back on it now and say that it's the best work you've done in 27 years. Somewhere in there, you must have opened up a side of you that's either been buried for a while or something rose to the top, you know, that allowed this greatness within you to just pour out uncontrollably. I don't know which it was because I wasn't there, but it must have been something like that.
I think the location itself has some sort of metaphysical layer to it.
An empowerment type of thing?
Something. It really does. Because so Elizabeth called me and said, she said, okay, Ken, we have to kind of reformulate this show. So they're going through post-production and they're editing it. And she said, Ken, you know, you're on the producing team now. So we kind of need to talk because we need to change the format of this program. And I'm a little iffy because God knows I'd already been through it with this damn season 2, right? So I'm like, okay, what is it? She said, you know, I know you wanted to do these like human stories. You know, the whole process of Tarot Date was shuffle the deck, change your life, human beings with struggles and challenges, changing them through a deck of cards and a psychic doing it. However, she said, in the mediumship readings that you've been doing episode upon episode, we have caught you having conversations with disembodied voices. The dead were talking to me and I was talking back to them. Voices no one else heard were caught as EVPs on the microphones. What's weird about that is, and for those of you at home who don't know how filming goes, every camera has a microphone. These microphones are isolated and every direction is labeled and every microphone is in that labeled direction. No one else was hearing it, but every single time a microphone would pick up a voice, a tap, a knock, a bang, I was talking to it in the direction that microphone was picking it up. So Elizabeth said, we really have some fantastic evidence about a human being able to talk to the dead. So what we're going to have to do is reformulate it, and we're going to have to like loop these things. We're going to have to like close caption what this dead man was saying, what this dead nurse was saying, what this father was saying to his daughter after having OD'd on cocaine. This needs to be there. What do you think? And I said, number one, is it legitimate, honest truth? Is this all authentic? She said, yes, absolutely. And then I said, number two, does it help the paranormal community? Does it lend credit to the paranormal community? Will they have benefited by my saying yes? She said, absolutely. She said, quote, even some of this is freaking me out. And that's Elizabeth saying. you know, she's made of tough stuff. So I said, yeah, absolutely do it. Absolutely do it. And so that's what's taken so long with it, is that when the camera stopped rolling and the editing started to happen, that we picked up some amazing stuff. And it's put together in a wonderful, beautiful package and should be available to you on the VidiSpace apps by mid to late February, and should be on Amazon Prime in late February, early March.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, very cool. Nice. Absolutely.
Now that you, because I actually, I went searching for it because I wanted to see when it was going to start. Like officially, if there was some official statement about when it was going to start last night, and caught the YouTube promo at the castle, and you had, you know, whoever was in front of you, one of your people. I thought it was phenomenally done, but
there,
it didn't.
Is there one of those?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I've not seen it.
Well, there it is.
Oh my God, help a brother out, dude. I didn't even know it existed. Wow.
Well, yeah, it's like 2.5 minutes long and has a narration by you, and kind of you laying out how your grandma taught you how to do it. And I think it's a phenomenal trailer.
Wow.
But yeah, so okay. You're welcome.
Thanks, babe.
You're welcome. I love it. You're welcome for me enlightening you about your show. So yeah,
as oblivious as I am to that, I appreciate it. You know.
Yeah.
But there's no mention of that aspect of it. The whole
the release
EVPs. Is that kind of going to be like a surprise type thing, or?
Well, you know, even though I'm a producer, Elizabeth Saint and Nick Groff are intelligent enough to not let me see anything until it airs. They're that smart, because I would be pulling everybody back up in that castle and we'd all be reshooting the damn thing, and it'd take us another year to do. So glory be to God that Elizabeth Saint has the sense that the Lord gave her, because I mean, I would be all up in it. So I don't know. I ain't seen it. You know, I haven't seen it. And so, look, here's what I'm to understand. I'm to understand that we went forward with some kind of an Oprah moment. That's what we were going for. We ended up with a Grant Wilson moment. You know what I mean? Like those disembodied voices, you know, were that kind of a thing, you know? So it's my understanding that it happens in just about every single episode. And wow. So, yeah, then, it's my understanding that some of it is deeply touching, you know, really touching, you know, to have a dad talk to his daughter after having died. That's amazing.
So I'm curious, I'm just going to use, like, let's just say I'll say season one. I was going to say like 2018 versus 2019, but it's funny because you filmed the whole thing in 36 hours, even though it's 2019 season. So it's only a little tiny chunk of 2019, but it's still going to be the 2019 season, I guess. But yeah. So you didn't hear any, like, nobody clued you into any of the disembodied stuff that you were talking about for the first season?
Well,
okay. I mean, or was that, because I have not seen it, so I'm guilty that I haven't seen it, but
skip it. Listen, this is the honest to God's truth. If I could wrap up 2018 season one, if I could wrap up season one and tie it to a cinder block and bury it and sink it in the Hudson, I would.
Okay.
And I mean this with love and respect toward VidiSpace and everything else. But what we were doing is we were doing it live. It was live. Okay.
Okay. So
what that meant was that I was up at 4 a.m. I was flying. I was driving. I was hoteling. I was driving. I was in a car. I was in an SUV. And I'm waiting for the internet to load. I wouldn't even go on until 7:05 p.m. after having done that all day long. And then sit down in a stranger's house and try to crank out an hour of riveting entertainment. Well, you know, when the internet is what it is, things would drop and this was buffering and that was buffering. And I'm sweating like Nixon because I'm trying my best to, you know, work hard and give it to them good. And nobody knew what was happening because it was all done live. There was no retaining that audio file. There was no retaining that film clip of, you know, there was none of that. So when they said to me, would you like to be a producer in season two? I said, absolutely. And the first thing we're not going to do is live. That ain't happening, you know? And they said, well, you know, we want everybody to know it's not filtered. It's not altered. And I was like, yeah. I get that and I appreciate it. But I ain't getting up at 5 o'clock at 4 a.m. in the morning and driving. You know, this is not happening. So they were like, great. We totally agree because it would save us a ton of cash. And I'm sure we'll have a better version of you at the end of it. And I said, the hell? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So if I could bury season one, if I could take it off of VidiSpace, if I could make sure it never saw Amazon at all, baby boy, I'd sink that mother. I'd burn it. I'd light a match myself. So, yeah, anyway, 2019, the season two is what it is because we had the time to really showcase what happens in a real tarot reading, and then it is a huge, massive bonus to it that they had the ability to go back and find those little, what do you call those, gems, you know, these little wonderful right. moments where the spirits were talking or knocking or banging or a doorknob was, you know, or a door was being opened, you know, because that happened in season two. And to the point where we had to say stop, like we had to stop the camera, stop filming, you know, that door just opened. You know, so those kinds of things couldn't have happened during the live season one. It just couldn't have happened. It certainly didn't happen. And that's a bummer. But yeah, big difference between season one and season two. Huge.
Okay. So follow up question on that then. Do you think that you had mentioned earlier that the castle had kind of a metaphysical type of effect, right?
Yeah.
So do you think that that location was responsible for maybe a portion of the activity that you got that you're discussing right now? Or do you think that you would have gotten it no matter where you were shooting?
I don't know. That's a good question. The answer being, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think like, The castle itself is not something that has a huge amount of history. You know, it's not. The area we were in actually burned some time back, if I'm not mistaken, and was rebuilt. So a lot of it is newer, you know. Yep. So I don't think that there were spirits there that gave us that. I think the environment, there was raining. There was a lot of lightning. This isn't a great big open field. I think it absorbs a lot of energy. You can't go in the building and not feel energy. I mean, in the castle, you certainly couldn't go in that turret and not feel energy. As a matter of fact, Elizabeth Saint herself changed after having spent the night in that turret, to the point where it was noticeable. And she noticed it after we were discussing it. And, you know, so I don't know if it was the building itself. I just think somehow the powers that be, I think the spirits with whom we were talking about, I think the actual clients themselves carry these spirits with them. I think it was a combination of a wonderful metaphysical additive to be in that building, that castle. But I think it really boiled down to who I was with, their story, and then the truth of what happens when a real psychic tries to tap into that. I think it was just a great marriage of these things. So I don't know what the intelligent way to have wrapped that up in, and I'll just say it's just fantastic, and I enjoyed it. And I think maybe season three will be filmed there if I'm here in Kentucky. I think maybe season three will be filmed there.
Nice.
Yeah.
So is that going to be part two 2019, or is that going to – where do we have to wait till 2020?
You know, I think you'll have to wait until 2020 if it's anything. I think it'll be filmed late 2019. That is, if everybody loves it and watches it and shares it and nurtures it and cares for it and enjoys it the way I think they would, I think it'll be 2020 before it airs. Yeah.
Sweet. So how, with the 7 minutes we have left, You do obviously professional readings for anybody. It's not just the show and that's it.
Right.
I myself had one with you last week.
Yeah.
And how would one go about scheduling a reading with you?
You can go to Tarot by Ken. TarotByKen.com. You can go to TarotByKen.com. I almost said Tarot. Anyway, I almost messed it up. TarotByKen.com. You can also go to any of my social media, which is always Ken Bogle. It's on Snapchat, Ken Bogle, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Everything is at Ken Bogle. And just message me, tweet me, say, hey, I want that. Or you can just send an email to houseofcardstarot@outlook.com, and I will get that as well. I always prefer that people find me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, because that's, you know, that's add me as a friend or follow me or whatever, because that's how you'll get like all these updates and, you know, get a glimpse into my weird mind as I post random bizarre stuff and all that. But yeah, that's how they do it. They find me there.
Perfect. And where else would people be able to see you in the next couple months?
Well, you can go to the Mystical Fair of Lexington, and that happens every month. That's every month. If you want to see me in person and not pay me $150 an hour to come to your house, because that's what I charge, then if you don't want to do, you come to the Mystical Fair of Lexington, and the schedule for that can be found at mysticalfairlex.com. Happens every month. And what you do there is you'll see the calendar. It'll tell you, you know, when we will be there. I'm always there every month. It's a wonderful, great, fantastic, fantastic experience to come to that. And then you can go directly from there to clicking book an appointment, and you find me, click on that, pick your time, find a slot that's open, which is hard to do, but get in there and get it done. And then what service you want, you know, a 15-minute reading, a 30-minute reading, a one-hour reading, things like that. You can also go to the Scarefest. So Scarefest 2019 will be in late September. I think it's 12th, 13th, 14th, maybe in September, so mid-September. You go to thescarefest.com for that. And I do all kinds of things there. I do a lecture series. Well, not a lecture. It's just me running my mouth for an hour about paranormal industry, the people I know, and the paranormal celebrities and what junk they're up to. It's a very Wendy Williams moment where I tell all the garbage and make a bunch of really great jokes. That's called Paranormal Hangover. That'll be the third time this year that I've done it. This will be Paranormal Hangover Part 3, because it's the third annual time I've done it. And then there's also the gallery reading that follows, which is On Blast with Ken Bogle. Everybody in the room gets read. Those things are 100% free. If you buy a ticket to come to the Scarefest, my gallery readings are free. My Paranormal Hangover chit-chat is totally free. And I think as a ticket holder to a con, you shouldn't have to pay another dime. I just don't, you know, and that's going to be my theory for a long time. So I want the ticket holders to know they're appreciated. And then you can go to Salem Con. I am stoked about Salem Con because I've never been in Salem. How is that possible? Like, really? But Salem Con in April 2019, I'm going to be there with Grant Wilson, and John Zaffis will be there. Chad Lindbergh will be there. And, you know, it's going to be a fantastic, wonderful time. And then I think in June, maybe I'm not allowed to talk about this. Who cares?
Just throw it out there. It's okay. You're fine. It's just us.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think he'll beat me over. But anyway, in June of 2019, we're going to have a psychic event that has never been done before. It's going to be the location is still to be determined, but it's going to be a chance for people to experience a psychic reading in a way that has never been tried. And I can't wait. I'm super excited about it. There's a lot of really talented, up-and-coming, fabulous psychics that are going to be doing it with me, and mediums. And stay tuned for details about that, but that'll be in June. So, you know, there's tons of great things. You can see me in monthly at the Mystical Fair Lexington. You can see me in April at the Salem Con, June at this huge event I'm about to do. And then in September, you come to the Scarefest. And then you answer that phone.
Nope.
Not me. That wasn't me.
No, nope, it was me. You know, yeah. It was funny because I don't know how to get rid of it. I'm about to toss it out my door.
That's probably my friend who's booked that big event saying, shut him up. Don't let him say another word.
I don't know how they would have my number for that. But
weirder things have happened.
Yeah, yeah.
When you pick it up and it's like the Mothman prophecies, you'll be like, what? What the hell's going on?
Okay, let's see. Who just called? I don't know who that is. So, you know, it was funny because I was actually thinking before the show about how embarrassing it would be if it rang during the show.
And... Oh,
there you go. Yeah. In the last minute. In the last minute, you were able to pull it out.
Yes, that's what she said.
On that note.
And we're done. That note, yeah.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, being our first guest of 2019.
Woo. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I just got to say, just for us people that aren't going to, possibly not going to make it to Scarefest. Where is Scarefest, by the way? In what state?
Yeah, Lexington.
It's in Lexington? Okay. Yeah. Well, that might not be a bad trip. That might be a nice road trip. So, but for people who can't get there, later this year, what do you think about doing the Paranormal Hangover live with us? And we'll just let you roll and then just feed you along the way.
Ooh, we'll have to talk about that. Let's talk to Lindsay Center about that and see what she thinks.
All right. Yes, especially since now we're late.
Oh, right.
So that does it for us here tonight. Again, thank you, Ken, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Ken.
For Dave and myself, we'll see you next week. Everybody.